Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Vlad Sedler at RotoGut, joined, as always, by @Boom62, Jason Anthony. Jason, the season's over. The preseason has begun. What is going on, my brother?
What up, Vlad? It feels like months since we've talked. I was having some Vlad withdrawals, you guys really, you and Joe did a great job at First Pitch Arizona. Love that pod. Love the interaction from the crowd. One of these years I'm going to have to get over there, but it's hard right now with a young family and, you know, traveling for some golf tournaments. So I got to pick and choose, but man, that First Pitch looks like an absolute gas, and hopefully someday soon I can get over there.
Yeah, I really only get two trips out for the year, and that's for NFBC in March, and then First Pitch in Arizona, and was on a panel there, got to do the live podcast, and it's always a great thing put on there by the team at Baseball HQ, Brent Hershey, Ray Murphy, Ryan Bloomfield, and the rest of the team, big part of that, but you get to go watch some games, hang out with friends, there are drafts. We did not get the end of the World Series, because the World Series ended the day before we arrived in Arizona, which I guess was good. It would have been fun to watch with, you know, a few hundred of your closest baseball friends, but I don't know. Game six may have been cutting it a little close.
Yeah, it's nice to focus just on what you're there for rather than, you know, the World Series and kind of pulling the attention away from the prospects and everything. But, you know, I can't imagine a better way to get you kind of kickstarted with your offseason prep than going there and kind of, you know, diving in and kind of get rejuvenated going into the offseason. You know, we got about 4 months before draft season hits. Feels like a long time, but man, we all know how fast that comes up.
And we are recording this on November the 12th on a Tuesday night, and we are exactly 3 months from the beginning of from when pitchers and catchers report to spring training. And you might notice that this podcast has started the new season earlier than we usually have, and that's because fantasy baseball drafting has really turned into a year-long phenomenon. And I mean, to be honest, just, yeah, we got to stay front and center of everything. So whereas usually I would take at least a month off and then start prepping for the draft guide in mid-December and usually starting my first draft champions sometime a little bit after Thanksgiving, after being around everything in First Pitch Arizona, I just wanted to get right to it and jump in the draft room. So hopped into my first draft champions, entered a second one, and then three gladiators. I bought the six pack of gladiators. Those are the $50 entries, and you know, it's a standard roto, but you fill up your team of 23. It's 23 rounds, and those are the guys you go to battle with all season. So obviously being mindful of injured players that tend to get injured and that sort of thing, playing time, of course. But man, I'm right in the thick of it. We already have our first set of rankings released. If you are not subscribed with us, you can jump in now. FTNFantasy.com is the site /MLB if you want to get straight to the baseball stuff. And for those of you that are already subscribed, you know, just letting you know that when the draft guide comes out, which is going to be like December 17th, you know, the price is going to go up on the subscription a little bit. And everybody that already had been a previous subscriber, or if you want to be a new one, the way to get in on that old price is to get in between now and basically the middle of December.
Yeah, the draft guide coming out earlier and earlier, the work you guys put into that. I mean, you already got some VDP up, and God bless you for doing all the work this early, because we know there's going to be a lot of changes, a lot of moves. But for me and my fellow baseball degenerates listening right now, it's a lot of great information, a lot of great data, and it's a great tool to have as we're creating our own rankings and using yours to kind of help us navigate through these early drafts.
And to be honest, I'm really happy that I got back into it, because obviously there hasn't been much time since the regular season ended and you know, the World Series just ended. And so waiting a little bit longer for everything, I feel like some information does kind of fall out of my head and I am not able to stay in a rhythm. So me jumping right in and starting to work on rankings, and I get pretty obsessive on it. And of course, this is all pre-VDP projection ranking. So these are mostly, you know, these are going by the gut. and really identifying those you know, massive market inefficiencies, both those that have been overpriced because they had a career year in 2024, or players that are just completely overlooked, like your Bobichets of the world. Another example, by the way, just randomly, and obviously this is not somebody we're targeting, and he's probably dust, but Justin Verlander isn't even going in like the top 35 rounds these days. We know he's got another season now, but it's just crazy looking at the landscape, looking at the ADP through 22 NFBC drafts in 2025, and just like how many players that were somebody last year are a nobody for this year.
Little too soon on Bobichet there, Vlad. It felt like a jab at me.
No.
I mean, oh man, my biggest fail from last year. But you know, you learn and you take it into next year. But yeah, I mean, where Bobichet's going, you know, around 7, 8, 9 at that age and that pedigree, it's hard not to be interested again. But yeah, I mean, it kind of goes into what we're going to talk about with all these free agents this year, as far as, you know, historically when you're drafting, free agents have little value in the draft room because there's unknown about them. You know, they obviously can go to a worse spot, a worse lineup, but usually they bump up in draft costs once they sign. Perfect example for me is Christian Walker. He's probably going to move up a round or two when he signs because he's going to have a good team that he signs with. I don't see him going to a bad lineup. Right now the Yankees are heavily rumored on him, and man, if he slides into that lineup, I can imagine his draft costs going up a couple of rounds immediately, if not more.
Yeah, and of course, there's always that trade-off between drafting early and waiting, and obviously everything in most home leagues and then mid-to-high stakes leagues, especially in Vegas. I mean, all those are being drafted a couple of weeks before the season, but there's just so much just value on the table. Like right now, it just feels like, you know, the undiscovered land where all these players, especially as I'm drafting my DCs in like the rounds, the 30s, and, you know, getting into the 40s. And, you know, just a couple hours ago, I was looking back at my 1K entry draft champions. And this is a team that ended up cashing. It was third place, I think like 108 points or something like that. And I butchered the early part of the draft. I mean, I had, you know, Acuna from the top. I had Kodai Senga. Luis Castillo had a down year. But I really hit on a lot of the players later. It was like, you know, Alec Burleson in round 44. It had Crochet, of course. It had, you know, Ronaldo Lopez, you know, I think Profar, some other good players. So it's funny how much I butchered the early part of the draft and made up for it with some of those values later. And it got me there. It only makes me wonder what could have been if I actually hit on some of the early picks.
Yeah, there is severe values this early. You know, it's the age old question though. You know, they can do a DC this early and you could have, you know, 20 red suitcases by the time the season starts, or you can have 20 guys that move up 10 rounds. But knowing the player pool and, you know, really diving into, you know, who's coming up, who's going to bounce back, who's going to get playing time. Yeah, you can really, like you said, hit a lot of home runs later in the draft and really pick up for a lot of those injuries that you're going to accumulate from drafting this early. It's just, you only can avoid so many landmines with injuries, because as we all know, off season's fun. And then we get the news trickling into spring training. This guy's got a sore arm. That guy's out. This guy's out. And all of a sudden that team we loved in December, January, all of a sudden doesn't look as good.
And right now, as I'm drafting, I mean, we won't go too deep into this now because we've got some larger topics to cover, more macro ones. But I mean, even guys that I don't necessarily have priced much higher than ADP, but I'm noticing them all fall in drafts. And that's specifically guys that are had dealt with some off-season injuries after a season full of injuries. And two of those guys are Josh Jung and Christian Encarnacion Strand. Those guys are always available when I need a corner infielder several rounds past their ADP. And of course they both had the nagging wrist issues, injuries all season. Encarnacion Strand had the surgery like early in the year, was going to come back, never did. And then he had another surgery. Now he's playing in the AFL and seems like he's okay. But you know, those are the kind of things that people drafting in leagues where there are no fab, which is what we're all doing now, the draft champions, the gladiators, the best balls. Those are kind of scary picks, especially if you are taking chances on some of those other type of guys earlier in the draft.
Yeah, but that's also how you get your value, because I know we were both high on both of those mashers last year entering the draft season, and the injuries really marred their season. Wrist injuries are scary, but man, when you get that kind of value with those type of hitters, and Josh Jung and CES, Christian Encarnacion Strand, it could pay off huge. And you know, another guy that, you know, bit me last year, Matt McClain, is hitting in the AFL as well, coming off a season where he didn't really play at all. Actually, I don't know if he did, or if it was just the beginning, but he could be big value in that, you know, Cincinnati small park or Great American small park.
And on Matt McClain, I mean, we know he's going to be hitting right in a key lineup spot there, you know, second, third, or fourth. He does have second base and shortstop eligibility, which is what he had when he last played in 2023. And I mean, he's one of the guys that if we think he's going to get 600 plus plate appearances, we're looking at 25 with lots of good runs and ribbies. And his market price is really all over the place. I know the day that he went 0-for-6 with 4 strikeouts in the AFL, that was just a few days ago. And that was in between other good games. Like, he had a couple of good games, but that day he went 0-for-6. And, you know, talk about getting a little bit too into the weeds. I thought I could push him another round just because of that, because I figured guys I'm drafting against are probably really kind of diving into things and maybe overthinking. And they're like, maybe he's not ready. You know, if he's looking like this again, we got to remember we're talking about November here. This guy hasn't played in like a year. And I thought I could get him. Of course, he gets taken, and you know, that's that. But right now we're looking at 120 ADP. So that's round 8, and a min of 74 and a max of 154.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other downside of drafting this early. You're not drafting against any casual players. Anybody that's drafting this time of year is locked in, and you know, they're paying attention to what's going on. So you're not really having anybody just going to do a random league or two, or my one shot, and I'll get in the football when it comes. These are all the hardcore baseball players.
Yeah, indeed. And so just we're going to jump into these topics now. A quick note on the housekeeping side. The draft guide is scheduled to be released on, it's going to be about 6 weeks from now. It's Tuesday, December 17th. So I know you're not going to mark that date in the calendars, but you know, do it mentally, because you got to get in there when it comes out. We are in all of our meetings right now with the baseball team and staff and IT data team, and just, we got some really cool new things. Jason and I will be announcing those as they come out. New tools really focuses on just like more automation, providing you the best, most accurate data that we can, and then giving you the flexibility to sort of make your own decisions. And, you know, the whole like not, we have a wide range of subscribers. You've got the high stakes guys, you got the casual players, you got everybody in between. And so really the goal is to be able to provide something for everyone. And then of course, more fine tuning on the VDP preseason projections, which will come out much earlier than they have this year. And then the in-season projections and that whole process as well.
Yeah. I know we get very NFBC focused with the pod, but you know, FTN is doing so much to kind of do it for all fantasy players, whether it's head to head or points leagues or anything. So there's a lot of great info coming out in that draft guide, and I can't recommend it enough.
And also just last thing on the projection stuff, that at least the preseason. So we're still running the analysis on the sort of player by player analysis, but I did mention this on the pod last week. And this is not, you know, like back padding or maybe it is a little bit, but on the accuracy of the 5x5 roto categories, FTN, you know, I measure these against the, you know, several sites on the FanGraphs, the public projection systems that are out there. And of course, you know, getting innings pitched and, plate appearances isn't hard, because you kind of know what the, you know, averages are. But on every other category, we were first. We were the best ones out there. And so we want to, you know, we're taking that the next step further, trying to figure out what the sort of, you know, where the trends are as far as where, you know, what type of player archetype, you know, I was sort of more, or, you know, we were more accurate in with the projections. And also, you know, a lot of data and intel that, you know, me and the team can gather to make 2025 preseason projections like even better. You know, as you know, there were a few players that really stuck out that a computer isn't just going to spit out for you. Having that personal touch, I think, really helped. It's guys that really popped on our projections last year, guys like Garrett Crochet, Ronaldo Lopez, Jose Caballero, you know, a lot of those type of difference makers. We hope to find them again this year.
Don't forget about Tyler O'Neill and Jazz.
Jazz. You know what? Jazz was okay. He was a top 30 player, or, you know, top 30 hitter. He just about earned his price tag, but he's got a teammate of his that is the biggest, or a teammate, maybe not for longer, maybe any day things can change. Let's talk about the biggest name on the free agent market, Mr. Juan Soto. What do you think? Where does he go?
You know, baseball is so frustrating as a fan because it takes the first domino to fall to have all these other names behind him really start to go. I'm really hoping that Juan Soto kind of signs here in the next couple weeks so we don't have to wait into January for news. It sounds like the market's moving hot and heavy on him. You know, I'm going to sound like a Giants homer, but, you know, I just hope he doesn't go to the Dodgers. But, you know, it's hard to not see him in a Mets uniform at this point. If I had a bet, I would probably choose that. I would think they're going to let Alonso walk and go after Soto hard. He really fits that team well, and the owner has the most money in the league. He doesn't care if he spends the money. So if I had to guess, it would be him. I just, like I said, I hope it happens quickly.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there are going to be a lot of suitors for it. It was funny to see that the Rays were interested. You know, you got the Blue Jays, you got a whole bunch of teams. Obviously, the Yankees, you know, gave him a qualifying offer, but that makes sense. I honestly think the best thing for Juan Soto would be to remain a Yankee. I don't know what happens. And, you know, obviously, if you're a Mets fan, please earmuffs here or, you know, skip this part of the pod. But what happens? Do they drag him down or, you know, because, I mean, aren't they like cursed kind of the Mets?
You know, it's hard to say they're cursed with the fun run they had this year after the grimace surface. So I know the Mets fan had a lot of fun with that as far as pushing the Dodgers in the playoffs and making a nice run with that team after starting off so bad. And, you know, every team's cursed until they're not, right? Red Sox, Giants,
that's right.
You know, the teams don't, Cubs, they don't win. And then they do. And all of a sudden there's no curse. So, you know, it takes one good year. You know, Soto's already won. You know, he plays when the lights are on. Yeah, I mean, he is just top 10 player in the league, and he's going to get paid a ton of money.
Yeah, it's going to be big.
Do you think he goes near the Ohtani contract?
I think it's going to be massive. I think that's, you know, without question. I think it'll be obviously, you know, a little different, but I think it'll be close. I think even a team like the Red Sox, I mean, they really are talking about going for it. That would be something, right, for Yankee fans to see Juan Soto in that uniform.
Yeah, and it sounded like Soto did not have any loyalty anywhere. It's basically whoever's going to pay me the most, I'm going to.
Yep.
That's the true Boris client.
Yep, that's true. There are people out there that think he's a lot older than he is, like 3 to 5 years older. I've been seeing that. I don't know. Could be.
He's 20, never know. 26, 27?
Yeah, he's 26.
It's amazing his success in the major leagues. He's only 26 years old. You know, so that 12-year deal does not look as bad as these, some of these other deals that, you know, the Carlos Correa deal that got signed and then rescinded. Just to age-wise, at 26, you sign a 12-year deal. He played at 38. You know, he can still be a successful hitter at 36, 37 as a DH somewhere.
Another guy, one of the other top free agents, is Willy Adames. Apparently received offers from the Mets and the Dodgers. If he does end up with the Mets, he'd have to play third base because you got Francisco Lindor locked in there at shortstop. Vientos moved over. I mean, he would move over to first in that scenario, most likely.
I think that would be a perfect scenario for them because he is not a great defender at third base. They're more trying to hide that glove in the infield than feature it. And I think in a perfect world, you know, Adames might even be an upgrade over Alonso. They let him walk and move, you know, Vientos over to first base, and then you have a pretty set infield in that case.
I remember heading into this previous season, how it felt like even our projections, most projections, I mean, I don't think a lot of people expected the Brewers to kind of pop off like that, just to be such a dominant offense. And this is even when Christian Yelich went down. I think we had high hopes for Jackson Churio, but it wasn't expected, to be so immediate with Jackson Churio. But man, that team has been incredible. And man, did I take some L's on Willy Adames. Obviously nobody projected him anywhere close to the type of numbers he put up, but it was just incredible. I mean, second in the league in RBI, or at least in the National League, second in the National League in RBI, behind Shohei Ohtani, of course. But man, I mean, I just did not expect that type of season for Willy Adames. The one thing about him, it will be interesting where he lands, because the batting average is definitely, I feel like it was an outlier positive season for Willy Adames. I'm not sure where that's going to land anywhere, but he's essentially like a 240, 250 hitter. But either way, man, like, you know, going to the Mets, Dodgers, he's going to be in a good spot. But right now he's going at the end of the fourth round, around pick 60. How do you feel about that? And where does he have to land for you to move him kind of up or down your board?
And I think he's going to get a little overdrafted going into next season. I think they're going to look at this career year going into a contract year. And I think this was the ultimate contract year season. The 20 something stolen bases. I don't think he'd ever had more than 10 before that. He ran a lot more. The batting average spiked. I think he's much closer to a 230 to 240 hitter than a 250 to 260. And we all know, from the Kyle Schwarber years in the past, when he bats the 220, how much that hurts you. Mm-hmm. And you know, the recent trend in the industry right now is batting average, batting average, batting average. Depending where he goes, I could see him, slip just a bit as the pitchers move up, but I still think he's going to get a little overdrafted, with the profile that he is for me. I think you're looking at probably a high 20s homers, close to 100 RBIs, but the batting average scares me. And I think the steals, you're probably looking closer to 8 to 10 than 15 to 20.
Yeah, that sounds about fair. And of course, I mean, runs and RBI galore. If he ends up landing on a team like the Dodgers, I mean, where would he hit on a team like that? Most likely, if he's kind of their big ad, I guess it would be Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, and then Adames. That would make sense, because I don't think Will Smith is their plan as a cleanup hitter. I think Max Muncy, he's 34, he's getting a little older. You know, even the walk rate, not what it used to be. Way too much swing and miss. He's not really, that guy. I am actually out on Max Muncy altogether in drafts. I think there are a lot of other similar targets I'd go after that are younger. But yeah, I mean, Willy Adames in that lineup, I mean, he could have more than 112 RBI this season if he landed on the Dodgers.
Now, I read somewhere, and I don't know if it's true or not, that Mookie Betts is planning to move back to the infield next year. Have you read anything or heard anything about that?
That's right. That's right. He's going to be moving back to, Gavin Lux is going to end up being the odd man out. Most likely, if they do get Adames, and I do think that's the guy that we get, not Soto. And by we, I mean the Dodgers, of course. Mookie Betts would play second, and then Adames shortstop.
Now, Gavin Lux actually had a better than year than I thought. I got to dive into him, but he had a real good hot stretch there. Is he really going to be the odd man out, you think? Like, are they really prioritizing shortstop to upgrade, or they're happy with Mookie there? Yeah.
I think they're not happy with Mookie. I think there are some issues with his defense, of course, last year, and they view Gavin Lux as more as a platoon guy. I know that he made some improvements last season. As it stands now, there are so many free agents out there. They'll be adding some guys, but he's somebody that I think we would mostly see, hitting against righties and maybe being kind of like the new, Chris Taylor, Swiss Army knife type guy.
Don't put that on him.
No. The guy can actually hit. A couple other guys you mentioned. You already touched on Christian Walker to the Yankees. They have so many different plans and ideas for what they might do with the Yankees there. They were looking at some third basemen. and possibly even moving Jazz Chisholm back to his natural position at second base, which I think would make sense, even though Jazz did all right at third. So that'll be some interesting stuff. I wonder where Pete Alonso is going to land.
Yeah, I would hate to see him go to Seattle and just get that power sucked out of him. Seems like anybody that goes to the Mariners, their offense dips, you know, minus second half Julio Rodriguez. It's really a bad ballpark for hitters, one of the worst in the league by the park metrics. But he's got a ton of power. I can see a team really throwing a lot of money at him. He's a really tough guy with that batting average, though, the real low BABIP. But, you know, the 120, 130 RBI season's in there. So he's another fascinating domino to drop based off the Soto news and what happens there.
And as a matter of fact, I mean, VDP isn't too high on Alonso. And I don't know. It's right now, I think, so he's got an ADP of like 44. So that's right at the end of the third round. And I think I have a maybe half a round lower. So maybe like 50. Ish somewhere there. But you know, there are just a lot of players that steal bases, I guess you could say. I mean, obviously you can't pass on the power. I mean, we need power, right? But you got guys like CJ Abrams, Michael Harris. To me, Manny Machado is a stronger pick than Alonso. Just to me, just feels a little more consistent, even though you're not getting as many home runs. Ozzie Albies, James Wood with incredible upside. I could see him definitely gaining some helium, getting into the you know, second round, maybe at some point. We'll see. But I don't know. Just it's that profile, and we talked about it with Joe Arrico on the First Pitch Arizona live pod. But those guys like Austin Riley, Matt Olson, Pete Alonso, and even Rafael Devers, even though he does steal a few bases, those power only guys going in the second, third, I mean, you almost have to plan ahead for a build like that.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things, everybody's power, like power and batting averages here so far that we've heard. And I prioritized batter or power last year, and I still didn't have enough power. It was pretty fascinating looking at the breakdown of my teams. I got a lot of Aaron Judge. I had a lot of power guys I was targeting, and I still didn't have enough. So trying to get there where you need to on the power while keeping up with the steals, which, you know, it's pretty, it's a challenge. So taking that straight power guy early with no steals, and the batting average risk, it, no thanks for me on Alonso as of now. That could change as things evolve, but we shall see.
All right, let's talk about some of these big name free agent pitchers. And there are a handful. Most of these guys are between the ages of 30 to 35, just kind of off the top. It's Corbin Burnes, it's Blake Snell, it's Max Fried, Jack Flaherty, Yusei Kikuchi, Nick Pivetta, Sean Manaea, Nathaniel Valdi. We could throw in Severino, Frankie Montas in there, Matthew Boyd. But do you have any strong leans on these guys, where they'll land? Because obviously their fantasy value in some of these cases, right? Like Burnes, he can only really move up or down so much unless he signs like with the Reds or the Rockies, which obviously isn't happening. But there's also an immediate market reaction, and I'm talking about ADP, when somebody signs, right? So we don't know where Burnes is going to go. We have our thoughts, but if he goes to the Mets in a good pitcher's park, I mean, just by the fact that he signs there, he probably moves up like half a round.
Yeah. Anybody that's an unknown right now gets a bump once they're known, unless it's just a disaster spot, which, like you said, the Rockies and the Reds are not signing any of these pitchers, so we don't really worry about that as a industry. Like Jack Flaherty, I think, only really can go down unless he re-signs with the Dodgers. His metrics last year were phenomenal. It went back to, you know, 3-4 years ago, Flaherty, but who is he now? But if he's not on the Dodgers, it'd have to be a downgrade. So we'll see on that. Max Fried, more it sounds like he's going to part ways with the Braves. Anybody leaving Atlanta is a little scary. That's such a nice pitching factory that they have, and he's been so consistent there. You know, Sean Manaea really, really evolved in the second half of the year, dropped his arm angle down. I think he's actually going to be value moving in the next year, depending where he signs. I don't see him spiking at all. You know, Kikuchi was dominant with the Astros. I'd like to see him stay there. And man, you know my feelings on Blake Snell when the Giants signed him. I was out just because it was so late. But man, he was so good once he got going. I think he could be, you know, a first, second round value next year if he gets in the right spot and gets set and gets going early, because there's very few pitchers that did what he did in that second half. He was untouchable.
And I mean, at this point in the season, I'm going all, because I'm in these slow drafts, and as I'm going, I'm researching because I have, you know, the time between picks and really getting a feel for things, because I don't remember exactly, you know, what the difference between, you know, Jack Flaherty's ERA and FIP was, or, you know, XFIP or whatever. And so I have a, you know, good idea that he was among the, you know, strikeout leaders and basically had one of the best K to walks ratios in the leagues. But like, you know, I'm digging into all these guys and I'm starting to get a feel. I'm looking at, you know, everything, velocity, you know, hard hit rate, their splits, their pitch mix, what they've added. And I mean, I'm starting to get a little bit of a feel for all of these. But one thing that does stand out to me is like, you mentioned Sean Manaea. You say Manaea, I say Manaea. Let's call the whole thing off. I like him. Like he's going to like 175. It's like a 12th, 13th round. To me, he just feels like really solid unless he lands somewhere. I don't know. Like there are certain teams, like if Max Fried goes to Boston, for example, I'm less interested. If Manaea goes there, I'm less interested. But man, if they, you know, they go to San Francisco, Pittsburgh, you know, the Mets, I mean, those are great pitcher parks.
Do you have any feelings, positive or negative, with these pitchers signing big contracts as free agents and trying to prove themselves? I don't know if it's the Razzball guys or who it was about the, you know, we don't draft guys that sign big contracts. Is there any sort of feelings that you have on that?
It's hard because it's hard to make a hard and fast rule, because then you're just knocking off a big chunk of the playoff player pool. And I don't think that's a good way to go about it. And then on the other hand, we don't know a lot of these guys personally and their incentive and also, or their work ethic, right? Like there might be certain players that, you know, they just slack off a little bit more because they know they got paid, or just sort of motivated more by money as opposed to competition or like personal growth or, you know, competitiveness, trying to win, things like that. So I don't really know other than what we can tell, you know, from them on the field. So I don't feel like I give that too much thought.
Yeah. And, you know, is it New York? Is it Chicago? What market do they sign in? Cause obviously some markets are tougher than others. It's an interesting dynamic though, to watch these free agent pitchers, because how many of these free agent deals have really gone well for teams that have signed them and they've changed teams. It seems like fewer than most are going well.
Yeah. And I wonder like where somebody like Nick Pivetta signs, because he's somebody that he had a bit of an unlucky season. The most incredible part of his season was his walk rate. It's something that's just continuously decreased year over year, as, you know, introduced a new pitch. What was it, last year, the previous season? And just really ran into some bad luck. But from like a 10% walk guy, basically, in, you know, around COVID and the couple of years before and after that, to 8.5% in 2023, a 6% walk rate last year, which is one of the better rates in the majors among qualified guys. Basically has a 1.12 whip over the last couple of seasons. And then you look at his ERA, which was, you know, almost like 4.25. Actually, it was 4.14. And then all of his other indicators, ratio indicators, is XERA, XFIP, Sierra, everything's like 3.5. So that's the kind of guy, you know, that I'm looking for to target. And then, of course, where he lands is going to have some impact on kind of where I move the needle on him.
Yeah, he's one of those guys with the walk rate trending in the right direction that you can really see a late career breakout. I know you already had one, but you get that walk rate down to 6% and you get a good luck year on BABIP. You know, that's when you get down to the, you know, the one whip and the 2.80 ERA with a ton of strikeouts. I'm a big fan of him. I haven't got to him in my research yet, but anytime you say somebody's walk rate's declining by multiple points a year, I'm definitely intrigued on that, especially with his high strikeout upside.
And I have a question for you. What are your thoughts? Did you watch much of Matthew Boyd last season? Because he's somebody that our rankings, VDP, have higher than the market. Because right now he's got an ADP of around 394. So if we were drafting 12 teamers right now, he wouldn't be even in consideration. And of course, if we knew he was pitching in Cleveland, of course, was coming off TJ last year, but looked really good in those kind of dozen or so starts that he made, or maybe eight or so starts. But I don't know, man. There's something about him that I like. Like it's not quite the Cliff Lee how his career went. But I don't know. There's just something about Matt Boyd. He's a guy that I used to really dislike, and he was a huge, high Ks, high walks guy. And there's something about his profile that I like, where I feel that he's incredibly underpriced at the moment.
Yeah, I unfortunately did not get a chance to watch him enough. I did not pick him up anywhere last year, so I kind of didn't pay close enough attention. But, these late career breakouts, they happen all the time. You mentioned Cliff Lee. The 2 to 3 years, it feels like there's a guy that kind of comes out of nowhere to kind of elevate himself into that upper echelon of pitching. And Boyd seems to have the profile to do that, so I'm definitely intrigued in him, where he's going to go. Another guy on our Guardians, who's now a free agent, Shane Bieber. He's only 30 years old, coming off, I don't know if it was Tommy John or if he had the brace put in. I think it was Tommy John. But where does he go, and when does he start pitching? If it's sooner than later, he could be a guy that could be big value in the right park, because, man, he looked so good the first month of the season last year, and then just broke my heart on a lot of my teams.
Yeah, I mean, that was really bad. It was a few weeks of the season, and then boom, that's it. His TJ surgery was on April the 12th. So at this point, we're looking at what our average timeline is these days, around 13, 14 months. So we're looking at maybe best case scenario, June. We saw Jeffrey Springs come back within 12 months last year. In fact, we were talking about this before the show, because we have access to this pretty awesome spreadsheet that we'll share anyone. I'll share it in the Discord, that has all the TJ surgeries of all time listed. Just noticing the trend of, the guys that where it would take like 16 to 18 months for like the full recovery and then actually kind of pitching well, that now has dropped down by a couple of months. But you think about a lot of those guys from last year who returned. Matthew Boyd was fine, but Jeffrey Springs suffered from some elbow fatigue. Tyler Molle started dealing with a shoulder issue. These guys come back, but then they're not just all the way go. It's an interesting group of players. And of course, we have a few of those this year that we're expecting to come up that are some really big values.
Yeah, there's quite a few guys coming back, and off of Tommy John or elbow or shoulder, and I don't even know how to treat them. It's different if you see him on the mound coming at the end of the year, like we saw Jacob DeGrom, we saw Kodai Senga, we saw Robbie Ray, we saw Jeffrey Springs, but I know Andrew Painter's pitching in the AFL now, so we're seeing him. Where does he skyrocket to once he looks healthy? Shane McClanahan, we didn't see pitch. Sandy Alcantara, we didn't see pitch. Brandon Woodruff wasn't Tommy John, but he had a shoulder injury. All these guys, when they're healthy, are elite, elite arms. And we have no idea what they are or what they're doing. So it's kind of fascinating moving in. And, we can talk strategy at some point on it. How much to target, one stash, no stashes, take the risk and for the upside. But it's all fascinating to me.
Yeah. And we got to keep in mind that most of these guys are going to be limited on a total innings count for the year, and also within games, and maybe not always get you the opportunity to get the win. Andrew Painter has a bright future, and he's looking good right now in the AFL, like really good. But he, first of all, has to, you know, the management has to feel comfortable that he's, you know, ready and he's looking good in spring training and has to make the team. And even then, or, you know, has to make the rotation, the opening day rotation. And even then, you're not getting a full season out of him anyway. So there are kind of a lot of strikes against. So then it's just a consideration of market price and things like that. Like, we don't even know if he's going to be, you know, at this point he's trending to be drafted in main events, but by the time main event season comes around, it could be like, oh, he's going to AAA and people may not want to stash somebody like that. Shane McClanahan is somebody I've been personally drafting, even ahead of his ADP. And it's funny how this time of the season I'm into it. I don't know how I'll be like in a few weeks, but because you never know, right? Just like the one little setback, and we know he's going to be limited, right? What's his cap? 130, 150 innings. So he'd have to be like prime McClanahan to really be worth anything, you know, in the first five rounds, knowing that we're not going to get the full complement of innings. He's not making 30 starts this year, most likely.
Yeah. You know, and I don't know if the data supports this, but, you know, my mind always goes to guys coming off of Tommy John. The last thing that comes back is their pitch location. They struggle with command. McClanahan was already one of those guys with a higher whip, mainly because his ball moves so much. It's hard to control, but it's going to be really interesting as far as how effective he is when he comes back. And one more note on Andrew Painter. He's either come this time in March, going to be a top 10 round pick or not drafted at all. There's no one between on it because the arm's too good. So there's either going to be good news or bad news, but he's not going to settle in anything later than probably around 8 to 10 if he's healthy.
Yep. And McClanahan, I mean, he's hitting 94, 95 in his, his live batting practice. But yeah, I mean, it's for sure there's going to be a restriction there. Just a matter of, the thing is, when it comes to March, around that time or in spring training, if he's looking good and everything, I mean, we're looking at a completely different price. A guy that has a 120 ADP now could be 60 at that point, right? Just Tyler Glasnow in the course of what, 4 days, has jumped a few rounds just based on the fact that we didn't know what was going on with him a week ago to now he said it's only him that says it, but like that he is, you know, the elbow's fine and he's good to go, but who really knows?
Yeah. Jacob DeGrom, you know, his draft cost is already pretty high. I'm pretty sure you got a share already. He's one of those guys, if we see him pitching in spring throwing 99, it's going to be really hard to keep him out of the wrap first round, top of the second round. But man, the guy hasn't thrown more than 90 innings since what, 2020? So the risk is there, but man, the payoff is real with DeGrom. What are you doing with Brandon Woodruff right now in these drafts?
So around ADP, which these days is around, well, it was 200. I've been seeing it kind of pop. There have been times where I'm at pick 180. I'm thinking about grabbing him there, and then he's already gone. Of course, every draft is different, but that's kind of his range right now. I think the, you know, concern is noted. But if like I have a McClanahan already on my roster, or I have a DeGrom, it's nice to have a collection of these guys. But I try not to do that. But I think I tweeted or posted about a team I have. A fun staff that I have now that is, I gotta tell it to you. Cause this is just in one of those, gladiators. Hold on, man. Internet is crazy today. Let's see. It's Chris Sale. So it's not a DeGrom team. So I took Chris Sale in like the third round, or second, maybe, Devin Williams and Kirby Yates are my two relievers. And I got Roki Sasaki is my two, Shane Baz is my three, Gausman is my four, Woodruff is my five. And of course on Twitter, I'm getting, you know, kind of a little bit of the both sides. You've got your, you know, Dr. Daves of the world, not that Dr. Daves said anything himself, but you've got a few people like, oh, that's crazy. How can you know? And then other people like, oh, that's hot, you know? So we'll see. But obviously if these guys are staying healthy and getting you 140 minimum innings, I mean, that's going to be a rotation to contend with.
Kind of a perfect segue to the Roki Sasaki getting posted, right? you know, was going really late, you know, ADP 270 before that news. And now he's jumping up into, you know, the top 90, if not the top 50. Man, talk about electric arm. You know, Yamamoto came over last year, and this Sasaki's arm is much more elite than Yamamoto, but he's got a major injury history behind him. Never pitched more than 130 innings, throwing over 100 miles an hour. And we know the data behind these guys throwing over 100 right now. It's just not favorable to their arm and, you know, their health. So he's a guy that is going to be fascinating where he signs. You know, he's giving up a lot of money to get posted now. He's basically signing the international bonus slot rather than the huge free agent contract that Yamamoto got, kind of what Ohtani did. So he kind of, there's really not a team that can pay him a lot more money. So is it the Dodgers, or does he want to compete against the Dodgers? I guess we'll find out pretty quick on that. But he's a guy that I'll probably be passing on this year because the price is going to skyrocket, like you have on your notes, probably around between rounds 3 and 5. It's a lot of question marks for me in that area with a lot of other pitchers I like in that area.
Yeah, he doesn't want to compete with the Dodgers. He wants to be on the Dodgers, and there will be a lot of articles and speculation about, and really good arguments for other scenarios. But to me, this is not homerism. This is not like, you know, yes, it is a collection of the riches and it's going to be obnoxious and people are going to hate it, but it's straight up Occam's razor. It's like the most obvious thing. Like, you know, don't overthink this. This is like, it's Ohtani, it's Yamamoto. They just won the World Series. He gave up the money to post early. I mean, like, where else would he be going? So that's kind of what I feel. What is he worth the price? I don't know. I think there are a lot of issues and risk, like you mentioned. You know, first of all, 4 seasons in Japan. He's only 23 years old, and he's got like a 2 ERA for his career. He did lose a little bit of velocity last year, spent some of the year hurt. He's never pitched more than 130 innings. And so, yeah, there's a lot of risk depending on where the price goes. Like, where is he going to land, or is he going to settle? We don't know. What you will start seeing most likely is some second round Roki Sasaki coming up real soon, because it's already touching on that. He had an ADP of 30, or a min pick in, we now have 26 NFBC drafts, and he's got a min pick of 32. I picked him
was
at the end
you,
of the
Vlad?
That was not me, but I did grab him at the end of the fourth in a Gladiator because it's a Gladiator. Why not? I'm going to draft like 10 of those things. So, I mean, if I'm not going to be able to afford Suzuki for like the next 3-4 months, I might as well, you know, grab him now on a, you know, one of these teams.
Before jumping into the other imports coming in, I'd love to kind of get your mindset on this Dodgers rotation next year. We'll leave Sasaki out of it because he hasn't signed there officially, but Glasnow, Yamamoto, even Ohtani, and whoever else is their starters moving in, the, you know, the 4, 5, 6 starters, you know, they're going to have to go a 6-man rotation with Ohtani pitching again. Yamamoto, it's good for Glasnow. Does this devalue them at all moving in the draft season with how high of a cost they are? Some of the math I did on Yamamoto last year was he's going to max at 28 starts, even on a completely healthy year, versus these high volume arms with 32, 33 starts. You know, 4 or 5 starts is a huge difference. And then that's assuming health on both sides. Does that matter to you in your VDP rankings as far as knowing they're maxing at a 28 start year?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many factors involved here, but it's a matter of how you trust the either projection system or what you're making yourself and how you're weighing the categories, right? Because if you just input 140, 150 innings for some of these guys, as opposed to some of the other ones that are getting 170 or 180 at similar price, it's like, if you're expecting exceptional ratios from some of these guys, like we got from Glasnow last year, like, you know, we kind of expected from Yamamoto, didn't quite get, and that we definitely didn't get for Bobby Miller. But that has a lot of value when you consider fab leagues, because if you can play to your strengths of being able to pick up good pitchers through the year, or you draft a little heavier on the starter, so you have set starters, you know, ready to go, you can maximize the value of some of these picks. So if somebody's going to be pushing down Yamamoto or, you know, Glasnow, whoever, a round or two, just because, you know, oh, six man, then I think that's, it's not wise. There's amazing value with a team that's going to provide so much run support that's actually enhancing their ability to stay healthy the whole year by not kind of running them out there. And, you know, yeah, it sucks. You're not getting the two steps a lot, but there's just so much value to be a Dodgers pitcher. And they have so many of them, and that doesn't even include the ones they haven't signed. But if like Dustin May's coming back, if Bobby Miller actually gets back to normal, Tony Gonsolin's in the mix. I mean, there are so many of them that, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of value there, I think, for sure.
Yeah, it'll be interesting where their price settles at come draft season, because I agree with you. You know, 150 innings is the new 200. There is definitely a drawback when you're not going to get two start weeks. That definitely hurts the weekly stats when you're not getting that two step from one your ace, your number two ever. Maybe one week a year you might get that. But I'm not out on them, but it definitely kind of, yeah, not soured me, but it lowered me on Yamamoto last year. And obviously Ohtani, you're drafting for the hitting. It doesn't really matter. Glasnow, there's really no chance he's even going 150 innings. So it doesn't really matter on him other than the fact he's not getting the two steps like he was last year. Mm-hmm. So that might impact him a bit. So it's going to be interesting. Is Sasaki signs there? Just the rich get richer, right? You know, no sour grapes for me. I'm not going to get on a soapbox and talk about how it's ruining baseball, but it's ruining baseball.
Oh, by the way, I mean, if you want good news, I know you don't enjoy when something bad happens to others, even your rivals, but I'm, you know, a little first hot take here. I'm going to say that Shohei Ohtani isn't really it doesn't really factor in fantasy this year, or at least for the first half of the year as a pitcher. That's what I think. I think they're not going to push him. He's already has his timetable pushed back a little bit. I think they're going to continue to do that. They want him there and with the team and healthy all year. And if the pitching staff really does get off to a good start, I know this may sound crazy, but why are they going to like force him back in there? Obviously he's a great pitcher and one of the best, and gives them an even better chance for everything. But if that's at the risk of no Ohtani at all, why would they risk it? And so I think by the time we, you know, push gets to shove, we're talking about like, you know, June, you know, all-star break around then. And I really think it can be prolonged, you know, so much more than people are assuming right now.
It's an interesting take because, you know, Tani is so competitive. I mean, he's out there throwing bullpens when he's got a 50-50 season going. He's just so unique. And I think it's going to be really difficult for the Dodgers to really put the reins on him early, especially when he's working so hard to come back as a starter. You know, what I can really feel confident in saying with Ohtani is the stolen bases are going to really fall off. Anybody expecting him to get anywhere near that 40-50 stolen base is up for a rude awakening if he's trying to pitch. I think that was a really unique season that he took advantage of not pitching. And, you know, one might argue he might be more valuable if he wasn't doing both because of how much he ran, because I think we're looking closer to the 15 steal Ohtani than the 50 steal Ohtani next year.
And that brings up the case of if we're not sure about the pitching, if, you know, everything coming off that like massive season, and I don't know, just like a little bit of an aura about, I mean, how do I put this? Isn't there some value in maybe having like Witt as your top guy? Doesn't Witt kind of feel safer in a way, or is just, you know, me talking at the side of my mouth?
You know, Ohtani is so unique, and it's hard to bet against him. Even if he only steals 15, I mean, he could hit 70 homers next year. The guy, and then, you know, the opportunity to throw him in your starting pitching slot.
Yeah.
You know, if you need a week, you have bad matchups. If he has that random two start that he might get, if you're way up in hitting and you need a pitcher, or, you know, whatever it is, that flexibility is really valuable. And, you know, there's an argument for Witt. There's an argument for Judge. I mean, there's some crazy arguments for Ellie De La Cruz, which I won't listen to. But, you know, Ohtani is just so good. It'd be hard to not kind of snap call him at one. I don't think I'll have my KDS at one at any point, if that is helpful.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. But one argument you got to, I mean, we won't get into it, but listen, one thing I'm pretty sure of is I think Ellie De La Cruz has an even better season. That isn't this year. That doesn't necessarily mean he steals more than the 60-ish bags he had last year, but I think he gets a little better everywhere else. I think Ellie's a pretty solid top five pick. I actually had a really tough spot in a draft where I had two drafts start at the same time. I drew the number three pick in both. And I just couldn't commit to one of Judge over Ellie. And so my common sense said to take Judge, but then I wanted to do an Ellie, you know, massive stolen base team as well. So I just split the difference there. I took one of each. All right.
I mean, I agree with you. There is a massive season coming for Ellie at some point. But that batting average, again, scares me tremendously.
Kind of wrapping things up here with let's wrap things up with the old guys. First, what is dead may never die. Charlie Morton about to come back for yet another year, and then you've got a bunch of free agents. We alluded to them or mentioned even one earlier, but Justin Verlander, 42 years old. You got Clayton Kershaw, 37. Max Scherzer, 40. Kyle Gibson had a decent war last year. Quintana, 36, 37. Lance Lynn's 38. Alex Cobb's 37. Is there any reason? I've usually just been passing on these guys in draft champions, but if you were to bet on one of them to come back and be decent again or provide some fantasy value, is there anyone on this list you'd take?
Mad Max. The guy's crazy. I mean, have you seen his two eyes? He could go out and throw a really good 100 innings. Definitely not betting on it, but I can see Scherzer giving it one last hurrah on trying to make a World Series and to, you know, kind of gut it out and really go all out his last year, because that guy is a incredible competitor, and his stuff still can play.
That's a good one. Yeah, I mean, these guys, like, I know Quintana had a decent season last year, 3.75 ERA, 1.25 WHIP, low strikeouts as always, but I just can't get back on that train. Kyle Gibson, Lance Lynn, no. Maybe Alex Cobb, we'll see. I did want to give a just kind of one, I guess, behind the curtain peek on one player that has my kind of fancy right now, who I think people should be drafting. And I say this at the detriment of my own edge, my own opportunity to make money. And I'm doing this because, hey, this is also my job, FTN. But a guy that I think is really flying under the radar in drafts is Tomoyuki Sugano. So he is like the man. I don't know if he's the Scherzer of, you know, the MPB or, you know, whoever you want to call it, but he's an all-time great. So he's been in that league for about 12 years. He's got basically a walks per nine under two over that entire 12-year career. And this is competitive baseball, very competitive baseball. 2.45 career ERA, a 1.03 career WHIP. He's 35 years old now. So, you know, massive control guy, not a lot of Ks, but he's got a six-pitch mix. You can go watch some video of him. Granted, this is, you know, many years ago, but the 2017 WBC, when Japan lost to the U.S., I think it was a semifinal game. In that game, they lost 2-1, but he pitched six scoreless innings. He's got some wicked Ks there you'll see against Adam Jones, Nolan Arenado. Anyways, that doesn't matter for this fantasy analysis. But he's going in like the 400s, 500s, and he's definitely coming to the majors. Like, he doesn't have to even post. And he's connected to the Mariners, which obviously would be great for him. There may be a couple of other spots, but that's my thought. I think draft Tomoyuki Sugano, and if you have to, you know, take him before me, so be it.
Yeah, you can't get sniped in the 400s, right? That means you passed on him in the 300s. any of these older pitchers, or not even older, but kind of non-high velocity pitchers coming out of Japan, I'm interested in, because they're all based off of, you know, deception. And historically, it seems like the first year in the major leagues, that deception really plays up. We watched Shoto Imanaga last year really have a lot of success. I'll be interested to see how his success carries over in a year or two now that there's a book on him. But these guys really know how to pitch. And if the league hasn't seen you, they don't know how to attack you, and they don't know how you're going to attack them. So there's an advantage for the pitcher there. So the first year on that, I'm definitely interested. I would not be as interested if he went to the Mariners. There's really not a spot other than, Brian Wu's arm might fall off as we speak because poor guy can't stay healthy. But that rotation is kind of flush right now. But, you know, with Poto, he could trade at any point too. So definitely somebody I'm interested in. I don't think it really depends on the landing spot with that price point. I think he's going way undervalued, like you said. So I would definitely be drafting him right now.
And then also Jeff Hoffman, by the way, teams are pursuing him in free agency right now as a possible starter. And we know, you know, he's really transformed himself. I mean, he was a decent prospect, but you know, his career kind of derailed with the Rockies and then just, transformed himself, has been one of the best relievers in baseball, over the last couple of years. Could probably close anywhere, but he might be a starter. So, I mean, we've seen cases where that has worked out. We've seen cases where it necessarily hasn't, like Jordan Hicks, although he was pretty good kind of early on for your guys.
Yeah, I'm in on Hicks actually this year as a starter, year two on it, but I would not be as excited for Jeff Hoffman to become a starter. I think he could be a top 10 closer where he signs and his stuff really plays up. It's a long transition, as we saw with Jordan Hicks last year. It's not going to be a year one kind of go and rock and roll. I mean, although, you know, speaking out of both sides of my mouth, we saw Ronaldo Lopez really have a lot of success doing that. But he was more of a multi-inning reliever going into that, and Hoffman's been more of a one inning. But the arm is absolutely elite, and he hasn't really got a chance to run with that closer role. So I hope he does get a chance to do that.
Doesn't all this talk just make you want to jump into a slow draft?
Once I start, Vlad, it's over. So I am absolutely hard no on drafts until I get all my profiles and my rankings set up, because trying to limit what I'm doing this year. There is probably some gladiators coming, because I don't want to miss out on doing those, because I know those finish up pretty quick. And like you said, you can have some fun in those draft rooms and, you know, draft some teams you wouldn't draft in fab leagues or DCs, and getting in a draft room there, it's so much fun. So I might be doing that, but no DCs yet.
And this conversation, obviously, I think is probably going to get some people, get the juices flowing and having them jump into some draft room. So I look forward to seeing you in there. We have a lot of fun things to talk about throughout this preseason. When we have our next show, I'm sure we'll discuss some of the free agents that have been signed. There'll be some new market movement. And maybe we can even talk about, you know, how things are looking in the first couple rounds of draft. So I'm excited. I'm excited to be back on the air with you and doing our thing.
Yeah, just absolutely love to be talking baseball with you, Vlad. I definitely missed it. Loving football right now, but baseball is my true love. And, you know, it's kind of sickening, but I think I like doing the research for the drafting as much as I, you know, like the drafting. I think that puzzle and figuring that out, it's a lot of fun, and it's a labor of love. Not many people understand. Like, went to Hawaii with some friends here last week, and I'm sitting on my computer out on the balcony kind of inputting data in my computer, and like, what are you doing? Just like, I'm enjoying myself. This is vacation. So, but it's a blast, man. I love talking baseball, and I'm really looking forward to this year. Next year, I guess, would be 2025. But we'll be talking a lot of baseball here, moving up, moving forward.
And I will not mention a thing about how well things are going for you in football, because I once jinxed Scott Genstad from a Main Event baseball championship, and I definitely jinxed Jason Santu, possibly. Maybe. I don't know. If you believe in jinxes, that is. So anyways, Jason's having a fantastic football season. We'll leave it there. And that's it. For Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next time.
You know, Jinstead still hasn't forgiven you, right?